Thank you, and I'm very happy to give this talk here. So the purpose of this work is quite simple. Usual selling point for heterotic flux compactification is simply that because the dilaton is not stabilized, at least perturbatively, and because you don't have Ramond-Ramond flux, you may expect to have some tractable Rothschild description. And, here I will try to find some regimes where you do have such a description. So there are also other approaches to this problem, like in the work of Josh. But here I will try really to find a situation where you have a CFT that you can solve explicitly. So this is based on several papers. So this work is on the archive already. This one will appear hopefully next week, and the other one, I don't know exactly. Okay, so I'm interested in heterotic compactification with flux. So usually you can have a tractable CFT description of a heterotic compactification only at very specific points. As you know, you can consider the toroidal orbifold or the Geppner models. At this point, special points, you are not in the geometrical regime, but you can match the topological data to Calabi-Yau compactification. So you know more or less what you are doing geometrically. So if you want to obtain some realistic heterotic compactification, you need to consider more elaborated gauge bundles. And when you start using gauge bundles that don't correspond to standard embeddings, then you have trouble to solve the Bianchi identity for the NSNS2 form. And usually this leads you to compactification with torsion or NSNS flux. So in general, it's quite hard to study this kind of compactifications because they are not scalar and you don't have a lot of powerful tools to study them in full generality. So usually you need really to find concrete examples of compactification and to obtain them in full detail. So because this is complicated, I would like to study local model of such flux compactification. A good example is Klebanov-Strassler background. So it's a 10-dimensional non-compact background which was tailored for some holographic application, but it was realized later that it's very useful as a local model of type 2B flux compactification. So I would like to find backgrounds in heterotic which are similar in spirit, even though there are a lot of differences. So the basic example which contain most of the feature is some Eguchianson space with abelian gauge bundle. And after this, I will obtain some more complicated construction. One is simply a T2 fibration over this Eguchianson space. And the second one is a resolved conifold. Okay, so this is the outline of the talk. So first, I will discuss the Eguchianson example from the supergravity perspective. And then I will explain how it's possible in some regime, which is some scaling limit of the singularity, to obtain a solvable CFT for this model. After, I will introduce some generalization of this example where you have some T2 fibration over the singularity. And the second example has to do with the conifold singularity with also flux and some abelian gauge bundle. Okay, so I would like to consider this Eguchianson space as some local version of a six-dimensional heterotic compactification. So in full generality, when you want to compactify heterotic string on a to six dimension, you can use a K3 surface, and then you need to specify some gauge bundle on it, which tells you basically what is the low energy gauge group that survives the compactification. And you may have in some case some perturbative heterotic vacua if you have only one tensor multiplet, and you can also have plenty of vacua which are non-perturbative from the heterotic point of view, but may be perturbative from the type 1 perspective. So there are a lot of consistency constraints that such vacua need to satisfy. You have constraint coming from anomaly constellation, which relates the number of different multiplets. You also have the Bianchi identity to satisfy, which is usually the most severe constraint. And you also have additional constraint on the gauge bundle. You have one constraint on the first germ class of the gauge bundle, which is related to the fact that the heterotic string contains a spinorial representation of the gauge group in the massive sector. And this gives you some extra constraint. And you have also other ones which are usually not easy to satisfy. So as I said, one of the most important constraints is a Bianchi identity. So as you all know, the Bianchi identity is modified in heterotic string because of anomaly cancellation. It includes, in particular, a correction which is essentially the first Pontryagin class of the manifold. And what is important is that this correction includes is made from the connection with torsion. So you have some complicated nonlinear equation for H, because H appears both here on the left-hand side and here on the right-hand side. So when you want to deal with concrete compactification, there are various levels at which you can satisfy this constraint. The weakest one is to say, well, I simply need, if I integrate this on my manifold, I simply need that my gauge bundle has instanton number 24. This is a quite weak constraint, because locally, this constraint can be not satisfied at all. So there is some intermediate form of the Bianchi identity where you say, well, I want to satisfy this constraint in cohomology, but in fact, it does not solve exactly the Bianchi identity, because you need to solve this at the level of the forms, not at the level of the cohomology. And you can even generalize this identity if you allow five brain sources. So you can have extra delta function sources for five brain, but if you do this, you lose control over perturbation theory in heterotic. Okay, so the bottom line is that in most cases, if you want to use a gauge bundle that is not trivial, that is, you need to consider compactification with torsion. And as I said, it's complicated. So I would like to deal with a local version of such a compactification. So the simplest things that you can do is to consider a Kummer surface, which is a blown-up T-form at Z2 orbifold, and to try to find a local model of the T-form at Z2 singularities, which are A1 singularities, with some gauge bundle that it is not the usual gauge bundle that you have on perturbative orbifolds. So when you do this, basically, you have to wonder what happens in the blowdown limit, because when you blow down the singularity, either you come back to the perturbative orbifold point, or you can go to a regime where you really have a singularity in your description, which means that you can have some strong coupling singularity. And this is often the case when you deal with duals of type one models like those constructed by Gimon and Polsinski. Okay, so here is a brief review of Higuchi Onsen space. So I would like to deal with a non-compact matrix that represents the neighborhood of A1 singularity, which is resolved. So this space is a gravitational instanton in four dimensions that is actually a hyperkähler space. And you can write an explicit metric on it using SU2 left invariant 1 forms. And what you see is that you have a bolt at when R is going to A, where the S3, the three sphere which is here, degenerates to an S2. So basically, you have an S1 that shrinks to zero size at this bolt. And at the bolt, if you want to avoid a conical singularity, you need to change the periodicity of one of your coordinates on S3, and you end up with an orbifold. And this is why this metric corresponds to a resolved C2 mod Z2 orbifold, because orbifold is necessary in order to avoid the conical singularity at the bolt. Now we want to consider solution of heterotic strings starting from this space, adding torsion and some gauge bundle. First, you can notice that this space admits a normalizable anti-self-dual 2 form that is locally written this way, and this will be basically the two forms that you will use to introduce some magnetic flux on this space. So a gauge bundle on a Gaussian sun space amounts to some instanton for n equals 1 Young Mills in this particular manifold. So the gauge field needs to be anti-cell dual in order to obtain some BPS instanton. And you have various types of instantons that you can construct. The usual one is the standard embedding of the spin connection in the gauge connection. So you use a SU2 instanton, which is such that you satisfy exactly the Bianchi identity without flux. This is the usual case. But here we want to do something different. We consider an abelian instanton that you embed in the carton of the heterotic gauge group, which is either spin 32 over Z2 or E8 times E8. So for this, you simply use the anti-cell dual two forms that I mentioned in the previous slide. And you can embed it in any direction in the carton of the gauge group. And it will give a contribution to the Bianchi identity of this sort. So this is the integral of the second chain character. So it will be proportional to the square of this vector of magnetic charges. And you have essentially two types of solution. One, which are such that all the charges are integers, are called for other reasons bundles with vector structure. Another one where all the entries are half integer, and these are the bundles without vector structure. Okay, now we want to consider heterotic supergravity on a Gaussian sun space with this particular gauge bundle. And because of the Bianchi identity, this will force you to put some torsion on the Gaussian sun space. So when you look at supersymmetry equation, you find that you need to use some five-brain-like ansatz. But at this stage, there are no five brains in the description because we are looking for a completely smooth solution. So it's not really a five-brain solution, but it has the same structure. So this is six-dimensional flat space. This is a Gaussian sun metric with some conformal factor. So the solution will be some conformally Gaussian sun space. So the dilaton is given simply by the conformal factor, and you can also get the torsion completely from the conformal factor. So, yes?
Is that the string frame metric?
It is string frame, yes. Because in Einstein frame, you do have some power of the conformal factor over there. So the hard part of the game is, again, the Bianchi identity, because so it will relate the derivative, exterior derivative of this torsion to F squared and a contribution from the curvature to form. So in the particular case we are looking at, the abelian gauge bundle, it takes this form. So on the left-hand side, you have a Laplacian on a Gaussian sun of the conformal factor. Here you have the term coming from the gauge bundle, and you have this term coming from the curvature correction. So it's very hard to solve this equation using the actual form of the R squared term, which is very complicated. So what we will do first is to consider a regime where this term is negligible. And we will see later on how we can actually solve exactly this identity with the R squared term. So if we are in the large charge limit, which means that the norm of this vector is much bigger than 1, the R squared term is negligible. And in this case, the solution of the Laplace equation is very simple. You have a conformal factor which is of the same type as a five-brain solution. So you obtain a solution which is leading order when you expand in powers of 1 over L squared. And this solution is perfectly regular, so you don't have five brain sources. In some sense, it can be viewed as some back-reacted solution from wrapped five brain. And the dilaton is bounded from above. Actually, to completely specify this background, you have to tell how you embed this U1 instanton inside the SO32 carton. So if you start with this solution and you go to the Blaudon limit, in this case, you do find explicitly five-brain sources because Basically, the gauge instanton become a point-like instanton, and you obtain fibrin. This is not the usual way that you find fibrin in heterotic, because usually you start with SU2 instanton, non-abelian instanton in flat space. You squeeze them to zero size, and you obtain the Kalan-Ravensch-Strominger fibrin. And in this case, you start instead with an abelian instanton sitting at a singularity, and you shrink the bulk to zero size. So this, yes?
So, I mean, if you just take a stack of Neuvirth-Schwarz five rings,
yes,
the metric is perfectly smooth. So even if, I mean, in the string frame.
Yes, but not the dilaton.
The dilaton would get big.
Yes, exactly.
Here you say the dilaton is constant down
yeah,
the road.
Yeah, it's not constant, but it's bounded from, I mean, it goes to a maximal value at the bolt, and then it stops running. So it's bounded. But if you take A to zero, then you will get back to the usual case. But when the singularity is resolved, basically, why you don't have a singularity? Because you remove from the background the singular region because of the bolt. So the conformal factor is the same as the usual one, but the only difference is that R cannot be smaller than A. And because of this, it's perfectly regular. Okay, so a last comment about the Bianchi identity. I said that you cannot satisfy locally the Bianchi identity because the R square term has a functional dependence which is not the same as the other terms. But nevertheless, you can, if you integrate the Bianchi identity over the whole manifold, you can find some tadpole condition which looks like this. So what does it mean? If you take L squared to be 6, then there is no fibrin charge. It means that in this case, you do have torsion, but in some sense, the torsion just comes as a local correction to the solution. So it may be viewed from distance as a resolution of Norbifold singularity. So it's very easy to classify all the possible cases that satisfy this constraint. And actually, these cases were already considered from the Norbifold perspective. And the last case is the dual of the Gimon-Polchinski model. And these other cases are also related to blow-up of some of C2 mod Z2 orbifold with a particular action in the gauge group. So of course, when L squared is small, you cannot use the supergravity approximation, but we will come back later to this particular example. So now we would like to find a particular regime of this solution where we can actually solve the CFT. And this limit is defined as follows. So basically, we want to throw out the asymptotically locally flat part of the solution to obtain like a Schrodt geometry, exactly like the Klebanov-Strassler Schrodt. So how you define this limit? We already say that when you take the blowdown limit, the string coupling goes to infinity. So it's typically a case where you can define a double scaling limit. So to do this, you take the asymptotic string coupling to zero. And at the same time, you take the quantity that plays the role of the effective string coupling at the bolt. You keep this quantity fixed. So in this limit, you want to stay at finite distance from the singularity. So you keep fixed this R over A ratio. And if you take this limit, you obtain this solution in a new system of coordinates. But it's really the same solution in the near horizon limit in another system of coordinates. So you can first notice that in this regime, you don't have actually any trace of the blow up parameter in the metric. It's completely eaten by the zero mod of the dilaton over there. So you start with a solution with two parameters, and you end up with a solution with only one parameter, which is a double scaling parameter. So there is at least one regime where you know already that you have a CFT. If you take the blowdown limit, I told you already that you obtain the usual fibrin solution. So in this case, if you go to the near horizon regime, then you obtain the well-known CHS background for fibrin. So it's an exact CFT which is made of a Vesuminowitan model for SU2, which describes a three-sphere with a linear dilaton. So it's a solvable CFT, but nevertheless, you have a strong coupling in space-time. So it's not really good for doing perturbation theory. So in our case, we don't have exactly the CHS background. We have some orbifold of it because the five brains are sitting at a singularity. The Z2 orbifold has a very simple action on SU2 group elements, and you obtain just a length space S3 mod Z2. So you also have to specify the action of the orbifold in the gauge group of the heterotic. And in the cases with vector structure, which means that the vector has only integer entries, you don't break any gauge symmetry with this. Okay, so you can write the usual, the full partition function in this blow-down limit. It's not very complicated. You simply have to use SU2 characters. And this sum over gamma and delta is the orbifold of S3 that gives you the length space. And the other stuff is very standard. These are the left-moving free fermions that give you a fermion in space-time. And this corresponds to the fermion of the heterotic lattice. So this is not so far very interesting and very new. We just recover our usual five brain. The question is whether we can obtain also the CFT for the double scanning limit, which is really some solution which is conformal to Higuchi's son. With non-trivial torsion and gauge bundle. So of course the answer is yes. Also in the double scanning limit, you do have a Wolschitz CFT. This Wolschitz CFT is a little bit more complicated than the CHS CFT. So you start with a product of SL2R Vesuminowitan model and an SU2 Vesuminowitan model with 1,0 supersymmetry. And you do a very asymmetric gauging. So this, the first gauging is acting by left multiplication in SL2 and SU2, and the right gauging is acting only in SL2. So of course, because this is completely asymmetric, this gauging is anomalous. But in heterotic, it's not usually a problem because you can couple minimally the fermion of the heterotic to the Wolschitz gauge field in order to obtain a non-anomalous coset conformal field theory. And in fact, you embed the gauging in the SO32 carton with the same vectors that we used before in supergravity, and you obtain an anomaly-free coset when K takes this particular value. So compared to the supergravity expression, you have some correction here by minus one. So what we have obtained here is that we are able to describe this solution, which is conformal to Higuchi-Hansson, by a CFT. So to show this, you have to show that the gauge Vesuminowitan model that is constructed this way gives the same background fields as the supergravity solution. So for this, you can do it in the usual way. You need to integrate out classically the Wolschitz gauge fields. But in this case, it's slightly more complicated because of the asymmetric nature of the coset, you need to bosonize all the heterotic fermions and then to refermionize again at the end of the day. But you obtain exactly the same background fields. And in particular, if you look at the four fermion interaction on the worksheet, it reproduces the gauge bundle that you are looking for. So because it's a coset CFT, in principle, you can obtain a metric that solves exactly the Bianchi identity. In order to do this, you need to go beyond the classical integration of Wolschitz gauge field, but you have an algorithm which allows to do this. So it's an exact solution of a heterotic string. So you can actually do more than saying that it's a coset CFT. You can solve completely the CFT by using the usual techniques of a gauge Vesuminowitan model. So you start with your Vesuminowitan model CFT, and you solve algebraically the constraint coming from the gauging. So to do this, technically, you split the SL2 and SU2 Vesuminowitan models in terms of the SL2 mod U1 and SU2 mod U1 cosets times the carton that you want to gauge. And then you implement the constraint of the gauging on the carton. So on the left moving side, you obtain a product of SL2 mod U1 and SU2 mod U1 coset. super cosets because it's supersymmetric. And because of the Ganjin, they need to have the same hard charge on the worldsheet. And because of this constraint, you have supersymmetry in space-time. On the left moving right moving side, the story is similar. So you split SL2 in SL2 mod U1 times U1, and the charges of the coset are identified with the fermion number corresponding to the gauging in the heterotic lattice. So once you have done this, you have solved this constraint, you can construct the full spectrum of the CFT. You have two kinds of states. You have states which are discrete representation of SL2, and they correspond to states in space-time which are localized at the bolt. So they correspond really to fields living at the singularity. So if you look at massless states for the last movers, you find plenty of them. You have k minus one of them, which are chiral primaries of the worldsheet n equal to two superconformal symmetry. But when you use also level matching with the right moving CFT, as usual in a heterotic, you have to throw away most of the states, and you are left with only a few massless states that correspond to some hypermultiplets in space-time that are massless. And because you have a very explicit description of them, you know exactly under which representation they transform under the unbroken gauge group. So if you do this, you don't find among the massless states the gauge bosons, because the only massless states that have support near the singularity correspond to the massless states that are interacting in the blow-down limit. So in the blow-down limit, we obtain some kind of little string theory because it's a five-brain solution, and only those degrees of freedom are supported near the singularity. And for instance, the gauge bosons become non-normalizable state in this regime. So there is a last interesting part of this CFT discussion, which has to do with worldsheet instantons, because as we have a CFT, we have full control over alpha prime effects and even over non-perturbative alpha prime effects. And I would like to focus on a particular one. So in the supergravity, you remember that it was important to do a Z2 orbifold of the S3 that appears in the Gaussian sun in order to avoid a conical singularity. But the question is whether this is really necessary from the CFT perspective. Because after all, string theory knows how to deal with singularity. It may be not very harmful. The second question is, if you remember, there was this particular constraint on the gauge bundle, which was related to the fact that the gauge, the heterotic string contains spinorial representation of the gauge group in the massive sector. So C1 of V has to belong to the even second cohomology. And the question is whether the worldsheet CFT that we have can explain these things. The answer is yes. So one of the ingredients of this CFT is the SL2 mod U1 coset, and it's well known that it's corrected by non-perturbative effect. So these non-perturbative effects are related to the quantum generation of some potential which is Sinuville-like. So it has some dependence in the radial direction, which is called rho. And it depends also in this particular case on the Cartan of the gauge group. So this x here corresponds to the bosonization of the Cartan of the SO32 gauge group. So you have some very asymmetric potential that involve also all the heterotic fermions that you use in the gauging. So because this potential is quantum generated in the theory, it has to belong to the physical spectrum. In other words, it has to be compatible with the spectrum that you get after you impose GSO projection and the orbifold projection. And it turns out that, first, this potential is part of the twisted sector of the Z2 orbifold, which means that without the Z2 orbifold that you need also in supergravity, you cannot allow a potential like this. And the second remark is that if you want that this potential is invariant under GSO and orbifold projection, you need to satisfy this constraint. So it means that we have some worldsheet. It's not really an explanation, but some alternative way of obtaining these two condition from a purely CFT perspective, and it has to do with a particular kind of Rorschach instanton effect. So now I would like to spend a few time on a particular example. So I mentioned in the supergravity part that there are particular cases where you don't have any five-branch charge, and you may expect that this is related to a blow-up of a particular orbifold. So I take this particular case as an example. So this is a vector of magnetic charges. So this bundle leaves unbroken this part of the gauge group, and you can explicitly find all the massless states from the CFT. And so these are the representation under SU6 times SO20, and these are the multiplicities. So now comes the trouble. You can also compute the spectrum that you get from blowing up the orbifold corresponding to the same gauge bundle. You do find, of course, the same unbroken gauge group, but you find completely different multiplicities. This is not so surprising because we know already that in our case, the blowdown limit is not the orbifold point because we have the strong coupling singularity. So it means that there is something more on the singularity on top of the usual orbifold singularity. So there is some kind of hidden instanton living on the singularity that gives you this extra five-branch charge. But it's not easy to find exactly what is this instanton, because this is a universal feature of all these examples. So it has to left unbroken all the heterotic gauge group. And there is one instanton of this kind which is known. It has been studied by Aspinwall some time ago. But it cannot fit in this picture because it lives only in the blowdown limit of the orbifold. So it's not completely clear at this stage what is this extra instanton that gives you a contribution which looks like five brains. Because when you blow up the orbifold, we don't see five brains. We still have a completely smooth solution. So it's not really easy to understand where this instanton is sitting. So this is still quite puzzling. Okay, if you don't have any question, I will discuss some generalization of this model. So up to now, we considered a Gaussian space with torsion and with an abelian gauge bundle coming from the heterotic gauge group. But if you compactify the theory on T2 to obtain a four-dimensional model, you have extra gauge field coming from the Kaluza-Klein reduction. And from the CFT perspective, they are not that different from the internal gauge field. So you can also modify a little bit the CFT to accommodate for this extra Kaluza-Klein gauge fields. And what is interesting is that you can even only consider Kaluza-Klein gauge field without any internal gauge field. And if you do this, you can embed this particular solution in type 2. So what you obtain in this case, you still have a space which is conformal to a Gaussian space, and you have a T2 which is fibered over this space. And still, this solution is an exact CFT, and in this case, you can do it either in heterotic or in type 2A or in type 2B. And you can also solve the CFT. There is one aspect which is quite interesting. So you can ask whether you can do this for any T2. The answer is no, because the way the coset CFT is constructed is completely asymmetric. You need actually that the CFT describing the T2 factorize into left and right movers. Otherwise, you cannot define the coset. So, yes?
Sorry, I'm getting a little confused. A is the one form, right? The usual Kaluza-Klein vector. But in your solution, it's D of sigma 3. And sigma 3 is a one form. So
yes, sorry, this is F.
That's F.
Sorry, and the charge is missing. Yeah. This line is not correct. Yeah. Yeah, sorry, this is the curvature. Yeah, sorry for this mistake. So to come back to the CFT description, you need to start at a point where the CFT is completely factorized into holomorphic and hot anti-holomorphic part. And you know how to obtain this. You start at the Fermionic point where actually the CFT for the torus is the same as 6 fermions. So this is a very restrictive example, and it's a compactification which is really at string scale. But you can actually obtain a more generic situation by doing orbifold of this fermionic point. But you cannot achieve any toroidal compactification by doing this. You can only obtain tori where the T and U moduli takes this particular form. So T is a complex rational, and U is it's not really a complex rational. So the real part is a rational, and the imaginary part is a product of the imaginary part of T times a rational squared. So it's quite odd, but you obtain some dense set of toroidal compactification which are compatible with this particular structure. So it's quite funny because you stabilize the moduli of the T2, but you have an infinite number of possibilities. So it's not clear whether it means anything in supergravity. Maybe it has to do with the way you define your Kaluza-Klein charges, because maybe this integer here enters the definition of the charges. It's still not clear for me. So once you have this solution in type 2, you can do some dualities in order to obtain solutions which are more familiar because they are solutions for this free brain with Ramon-Ramon flux. So you can T-dualize along the two directions of the torus, and you can first do an S-duality and after two D-dualities, and in this way you obtain some kind of fractional this free brain solution which preserves n equal to 2 supersymmetry. And you can find also the same kind of puzzle as we had in the heterotic case, namely that this solution is a fractional brain solution because we have a flux here for the three form. But nevertheless, this solution exists in the blow-up regime. But this is not what you expect usually, because when you construct the CFT living on this three brain at A1 singularity, you cannot get any fractional brain charge in the blow-up regime because it corresponds to the Coulomb branch that is lifted when you blow up the singularity. So again, the conclusion is the same. It means that the blowdown limit is not the C2 mod Z2 singularity, but it's a different kind of singularity with an extra instanton living on it. So now I will move to the last example. So I will be quite brief about the CFT because it's a generalization of the previous case. But it's more interesting from the supergravity point of view. So now I would like to consider compactification of the heterotic string to 4 dimensions. We know in type 2 that a local model of a 4-dimensional compactification with flux is a conifold singularity with these 3 brains which are regular or fractional. So as you know, the conifold singularity is a cone over a T11 base. The T11 is a S1 fibration over S2 times S2, which has S3 times S2 topology. So in order to put some gauge bundle on this space, we can first put some magnetic flux through the 2 cycle of T11, because T11 has a 2 cycle corresponding to the S2 and a 3 cycle corresponding to the S3. And we obtain a non-Keller wrapped conifold with torsion. And this is the kind of ansatz that we will consider. So this is 4-dimensional space-time, and this is a conifold space. So compared to the usual conifold, there are 2 differences. First, you notice that in front of the S1 fiber, you have some radial function. When this function is 1, you obtain the Einstein T11, which gives you the usual Ricci flat conifold, but here we allow for a more generic solution. And we have also some conformal factor in front of the conifold because we are looking for a wrapped solution. So we also put some torsion on the manifold. So this is the form of the torsion. And we put some unknown function of R here. And this is the 3 cycle of the conifold, which is naturally where we want to put the torsion. And on top of this, because in iterative we again have the Bianchi identity, we need to put some gauge flux. And we have the first component, which is along the two cycle of the conifold. And we have also another component, which is here. So because we are in heterotic and not in type 2, we are interested in finding two cycle and not in finding a two form and not a three form to put the brain flux. And for this, it's convenient to consider a Z2 orbifold of the conifold. Why? Because when you consider a Z2 orbifold of the conifold, you have more possibilities if you want to smooth out the singularity. You can still do the resolution of the singularity by bringing up a two cycle, or you can deform the singularity with a three cycle. But the last possibility, which exists only with the orbifold, is to blow up a four cycle. And if you have a four cycle, by Hodge duality, you will find a two forms that you can use to put some flux. And this is indeed the two forms that will correspond to this gauge flux. So now we want to start with this and that, and first to find some supergravity solution corresponding to it. So this is a compactification of heterotic spring to four dimensions. So this kind of compactification has been studied in great generality. And there is a whole machinery which has to do with the SU3 structure of the background. And basically, you can characterize completely the solution by a 3-0 holomorphic form omega and a real 1-1 form j. And the supersymmetry conditions are equivalent to this set of generalized polyboolean equations. And so if you write this equation using the previous ANSATZ, we find some first-order differential equation for the unknown function of the system. So this is not enough to find a solution. We need also to find the profile of the gauge field and the torsion. I forgot to mention that the solution that you obtain is a complex manifold, but it's not Keller. Actually, you can show that it's conformally Keller. So as far as the gauge field is concerned, you have to solve the Hermitian Young-Mills equations. And this fixes completely the form of the gauge field. So the profile of the gauge field is specified by this function. This function depends on a real parameter A. And at the end of the day, this parameter will be related to the blow-up of the singularity. So now we arrive to the hard part of the problem, which is again the Bianchi identity. So we follow the same track as in the previous example. We first go to a regime where the R squared term is negligible, namely we go to a regime where the charges are large. But in this case, because we don't have an analytic solution, we have to show that the R squared term is actually subleading on shell. I mean, evaluated for the solution. And we check this, and there is no problem with this term. So if you solve the Bianchi identity in this regime, you can find the unknown function G2, which appears in the torsion. This is G1 and not G2. You can find a relation between this function here and the function that appears in the torsion. And so the only thing that remains unfixed is the conformal factor and the function f that tells you how the T11 is squashed as a function of R. So this is the thing that you need to find. So we found a numerical solution to this equation. So this is a conformal factor. It grows when you approach a singularity. But because there is a bolt, it goes to a maximal value. So again, it's a regular solution. And this is a resolution function f. And the bolt is here. This is the point where this function vanishes. And it vanishes in the correct way in order to have a bolt. So this gives you a family of numerical solutions which are smooth everywhere. So when you go to small r, you find a bolt where S1 degenerates, and you are left with a four cycle. At infinity, this function f goes to 1. So you obtain the usual Ricci flat conifold. But it's not the usual Ricci flat conifold in heterotic because there is no standard embedding of the spin connection in the gauge connection. Instead, you have some gauge bundle. So it means that you still expect some correction even at infinity. So as you know, what I'm looking for is not a numerical solution, it's an analytical solution and even a CFT description. So I need, again, to find a regime where I can find this description. And for the same reason as before, because the blow-down limit is singular, we can define a double scaling limit, which is defined almost in the same way, except that here the ratio comes with a different power. But basically, you have also an effective string coupling that you keep fixed while you send the asymptotic string coupling to zero. So it means that you focus on this particular region. So R is bigger than A, but can be equal to A. But R squared is much smaller than alpha prime K, where K is a 5-Wendt charge. So when you do this, you excise the asymptotically Ricci flat region. And you can solve analytically the supersymmetry solution, and you obtain this solution. So first, if you look at the metric, you see that you have some kind of conifold, but the coefficients here and there are not the standard one. In order to plan a Ricci flat conifold, you need to have 1/6 here and 1/9 here. Instead, you have 1/8 and 1/16. So it's not the usual T11 space because of the torsion, basically. And because we consider the resolution of the conifold, we have this particular function here, which can be viewed as some generalization of Hegusian sun space to 6-dimension. And again, the dilaton has a simple form. And this is the gauge film and the NSNS2 form. So as you may guess, I will now show that there is a CFT description. If you go first to the blowdown limit where things are always simpler, you find a linear dilaton times a T11 with torsion. And the T11 with torsion is a particular type of heterotic coset when you start with SU2 times SU2 gauge Vesuminowitan model, and you do a gauging acting only on the left. So it gives you really a geometrical coset instead of the usual Vesuminowitan coset. And if you want to obtain not the conifold but the resolved conifold, you have to use a slightly more complicated coset. So you start with the product of this T11 space with an auxiliary SL2 model, and you do some kind of asymmetric gauging as before. And if you do this, and if you integrate out the gauge field, you also find, you of course find that the background field will produce exactly this solution. And again, this guarantees, because of this, you know that this is an exact solution to the Bianchi identity. And okay, the next step are the same as before, so I will not go into the details. So you solve the CFT by coset construction, you obtain the full spectrum, you can obtain the massless state, etc. And at the end of the day, you can consider also the Wolfschmidt instanton effect. And again, the Wolfschmidt instanton effect tells you that you have to satisfy this constraint for the gauge bundle.
So I think again, the blow-up parameter is somewhere in the coset.
No, it's not, because it's exactly like for the Hegusian sun example. The blow-up mode will be eaten by the dilaton zero mode. So in as any perturbative Wolfschmidt CFT, you have one moduli, which is the dilaton zero mode. And this dilaton zero mode will be basically this combination of GS and A. And this is...
So what you measure is the dilaton at the tip of the...
Exactly, yeah. So if you want to change the block mode, yeah, you change the dilaton at the tip. Because when you consider a coset CFT like this, there are no moduli, really. There are no moduli except from the dilaton zero mode. OK, so I will end with some brief comments about holography. So we have a background that preserves four-dimensional Lorentz invariance and which is asymptotically linear dilaton. So this is a case where you expect some holographic description, and the dual should be some four-dimensional n equals to one field theory. So actually, it's a four-dimensional little string theory flowing to a field theory, exactly like the Mendelssohn-Nunez solution. So, but the difference is that in this case, because we're heterotic, we don't know exactly what is the dual theory. So we can read some of the properties of the dual theory starting from the holographic dual. So first, we have we can identify the global symmetries of the theory. So the unbroken heterotic gauge group will become some global symmetry. So you get a theory with a very large global symmetry. So it's not usually something that you like to have SO20 global symmetry, but this is what happens here. And also, exactly like in Klebanov-Strassler or Klebanov-Witten theory, the SU2 times SU2 isometries of the conifold will become some global symmetry that may be some kind of flavor symmetry like in Klebanov-Strassler. So you have an extra symmetry that is usually the most interesting one, the U1R symmetry in spacetime, that will correspond to the translation along the S1 fiber. And what is interesting here is that this particular type of this type of Cortic non-perturbative effect will break this U1R because it depends explicitly on this coordinate, which corresponds to the S1, which is fibered over S2 times S2 in the T11. And actually, the discrete subgroup that is left unbroken can be shown to be Z P squared over 2. So because of all these facts, you expect the following. So you expect that in the blowdown limit, where the dual is singular, you have a four-dimensional superconformal field theory. Why? Because the U1R is unbroken in this regime. And what you expect is that when you blow up the singularity, you give a VEF to some operator in this conformal field theory, and this drives you out of the superconformal point. And of course, you have many ways to do this, and you can map the various choices of chiral operators that you can use to go away from the superconformal fixed point with the choice of the second gauge bundle. Because if you remember, we had two gauge bundles in this conifold example. One was living on the base. And if you want this, if you wish this first gauge bundle specifies a particular four-dimensional theory in the UV or at some intermediate scale. And this second gauge bundle, which is specified by Q, gives you if you want, the point in the moduli space of the theory where you sit. And this is quite natural if you look at the profile of these two gauge fields. This first gauge field is not normalizable, so it corresponds to defining the theory in the UV. And the second gauge field here has a normalizable profile. So this corresponds really to giving a VEF to some operator. So if you accept this statement, then you can even obtain the conformal dimension in spacetime of the chiral operator by using the superconformal algebra, because you can obtain the R charge in spacetime from the U1 charge of this operator. And the last comment is that in this case, you know that unless Mandasi-Namines type of example, it's not a confining theory. First, because you see that U1R is not broken to Z2. And also, if you compute the spacetime flux superpotential, you find zero. And in example like Mandasi-Namines or Klebanov-Strassler, you find a non-zero potential, which is a global potential, which is the same basically as the Veneziano-Yankelevich potential. So this is really a different kind of four-dimensional theory, which is not confined. Okay, so these are the conclusions. So we studied some local model of flux compactification in heterotic. And from the supergravity side, we obtain in particular a new type of resolved Rourke orbifoldized conifold in heterotic. And we have shown that in some particular regime, which is obtained by a double scaling limit, we can actually first isolate this throat region near the singularity. And second, we can solve explicitly the CFT. So here I list some future directions starting from this work. So first, I told you many times that this is a solution which is exact to the Bianchi identity. But to show it at the supergravity level, you need to start with a corrected metric in alpha prime. There is an algorithm to do this. It's very tedious, but it's quite straightforward. So it may be useful to do this, to obtain this corrected solution, because we don't know many exact solution to Bianchi identity in heterotic beyond the standard embedding of the spin connection in the gauge connection. So the second point, which is interesting, is to understand better the holographic interpretation of this kind of solution, either the type 2B with fractional brain or the heterotic conifold. And concerning the conifold, it would be interesting to understand how we can embed this singularity with flux inside a complete compactification of the heterotic string. And for this, maybe the method that Josh has studied would be useful, because in your case, I think you describe really compact spaces.
Yeah.
And finally, if you really want to compare this with type 2B compactification, in type 2B compactification, these throats are useful because you can generate a hierarchy of couplings, because you have a redshift in the throat because the metric is ADS type, basically. In this case, the metric is not ADS type because the time is not warped. But nevertheless, we have some type of hierarchy. Why? Because the dilaton is running in the throat. So it means that if you have some interacting degrees of freedom living near the singularity, the effective coupling will be much bigger than states living in the bulk outside the throat. And for instance, in this kind of background, the dilaton is living outside of the throat because essentially, because of the linear dilaton, the graviton in the throat is effectively massive. So maybe this may have some interesting application for phenomenology. Thank you. Yeah, that's true. There is a warping in the Einstein family.
So probably the hierarchy of scales is not exponential. Mm. But there is some hierarchy.
Yeah, there is one. Yeah.
But in the multi-Newton, there was exponential.
Excuse me?
In the multi-Newton solution?
Yes.
Was the hierarchy exponential?
I mean, the linear dilaton is asymptotically behaving in the same way. So it has to be the same.
So it wasn't an ordinary combining
games that the running of the dilaton is logarithmic both here and in the Madison and Union second.
All the way down to the
You mean here?
No,
in that case, asymptotically. It has a more complicated profile. And it goes also to some finite value. But I mean, you should not take this comment to say it's just some very.
I'm a little confused. You said that this example you had was not confining, but there was no single. The criteria for confining is that G00 goes to a constant term model. The origin is the usual holographic way of understanding this.
Is it enough?
Well, so long as the string tension is minor, that's usually the definition of confining. So we imagine that this is confining in some sense. You might mean that there's some discrete symmetries that forbid you from generating a band of the condensate is perfectly that you see holographically, but I'm not calling it not confining based on that. Not confining really requires that you have some infrared with massless particles all the way through.
There are massless particles.
Where G00 goes to zero. I thought that was the definition.
I mean, so what is true here is that G00 goes to a constant. And also, what I think is that there are many clues that it's not a confining theory. First, because the U1R is broken to a subgroup which is bigger than Z2. And second, because the superpotential that usually gives you the Venezian-Yankelevich potential is zero in this case. And And also because when in the blow-down limit, you find a superconformal field theory. So I don't know. You have some moduli that that allows you to interpolate between a superconformal field theory and some theory which is not conformal. So it's, I mean, it's probably some analog of Argyris-Douglas type of theories. So you have some isolated superconformal fixed point, and you can drive the theory away from this fixed point. But I mean, I agree with your comment. As G00 is not going to zero, we have to understand why it's not confirming. But I believe this is the case.